the Truth News Network. It's time for Real News
Without the Spin.
The only place you'll find it is at TNN,
the Truth News Network.
Here's your political ringmaster,
your host,
Dan Newman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the circus we call Truth News Network. I'm Dan Newman, and I'm glad you joined us here today. We're talking about the drums of war. Somebody's beating those drums of war again right now in the Middle East. Well, you know, thankfully the U.S. stays away from wars. That is unless, of course, there seems to be no way out. Yeah, I know that the basis for going to Iraq for those proven weapons of mass destruction that Saddam had turned out to be a bit iffy. Hindsight, always being 20/20, indicates that war was probably a mistake. A probable mistake that cost 4,500 Americans their lives. But that's a conversation for another day. The drums of war have suddenly begun to sound again. This time, again, in the Middle East. Even as the Obama administration quietly turned the U.S. into a cash cow when they sent $150 billion, that's billion with a B, to Iran as part of that Iran peace deal in an effort to coax the Middle East rogue nation out of their nuclear weapons activities, those drums continue to sound and are getting even louder today. The U.S. has tried many ways to nudge the leaders of Earth's number one terrorist power away from conflict. Current National Security Advisor John Bolton sent a mind-boggling message to Iran's leader in 2015 when it appeared that Iran was preparing to attack Americans' allies. Bolton's message stated that to stop Iran from bombing, the U.S. just should simply bomb Iran. Thankfully, no bombing occurred on either side, but the sparring and rhetoric between both nations' leaders is continuing, and it is escalating every day. Meanwhile, the citizens of both countries are praying that war never happens, that it stays away. This while American intelligence reports alerted military leaders once more that Iranian attacks may be imminent. The U.S. military responded to this intelligence by sending an aircraft carrier group into the Mediterranean. They did that to send Iran a message while getting close, just in case Iran starts some type of military conflict. Meanwhile, back at home, we have Congress. While this is going on in the Med, many Americans look on in horror as several members of Congress continue their rhetoric targeted at the greatest ally the U.S. has in that part of the world, the nation of Israel. Just recently, Palestinians lobbed more than 400 rockets into Israel that killed several Israelis. No one knows for sure if those rockets were actually provided by Iran, but such has happened on multiple previous occasions, and experts deem their involvement in this latest incident as probable. Muslim extremism in the Middle East is once again the probable source of the latest conflict between Muslims and the Jewish people. Such conflicts have existed for centuries. The U.S. has always, in similar situations, sided with Israel, but the new look in Congress may signal a change in that policy. This has many Americans concerned, as well as our foreign leaders across the globe, especially those in the southern part of Europe, and of course in the Middle East. But one Muslim religious leader has decided to take on these U.S. legislators who have been sending mixed signals regarding U.S. support for Israel. That Iranian-born Australia Shia Muslim imam, known as the Imam of Peace, called out freshman Democrats Representatives Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib on Saturday for remaining silent amid that onslaught of Palestinian rocket fire into Israel. This is what he said, quote, "Remember that time Omar and Tlaib condemned Hamas terrorism?" Imam Mohammed Tawadi tweeted that, and then he replied, answered his own question, "Neither do I." In other words, neither has condemned Hamas. Tawidi, who is the president of the Islamic Association of South Australia, was responding to the nearly 600 rockets that were fired into Israel from across the Gaza border. The Palestinian terrorist organization Hamas has already claimed responsibility for three Israeli deaths, that according to the Jerusalem Post. Neither Omar nor Tlaib have commented on the attack at all. They both became America's first Muslim congresswomen when sworn into office in January. Their time in office has been full of allegations of anti-Semitism and anti-American sentiments. Omar has defended anti-Israeli statements, such as ones invoking Allah to expose Israel's evil doings, and faced criticism from both sides of the aisle for promoting age-old anti-Semitic claims, such as that Jews' support of Israel is paid for and that they have dual loyalty to the U.S. and to Israel. Tlaib has also received widespread criticism for her ties to the anti-Israel and terror-affiliated activist. Pro-Hezbollah anti-Israel activist Abbas Hamadi attended her swearing-in ceremony and private dinner, and Tlaib hosted in her congressional office Joe Catron, an avowed supporter of multiple Palestinian terrorist organizations such as the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, Hezbollah, and also Hamas. She is also a member of multiple anti-Semitic social media groups, including the Palestinian American Congress, where members frequently demonize Jews and Israel. The founder of the aforementioned Facebook group, Mahar Abdul Qadir, is a Palestinian activist and was a key fundraiser for Tlaib's congressional campaign. Omar and Tlaib both fundraised with the Council on American Islamic Relations, that's called CARE, a well-known pro-Palestinian organization with ties to Islamic terror groups. The U.S. Department of Justice listed CARE as an unindicted co-conspirator in funding millions of dollars to Hamas. Additionally, the United Arab Emirates named CARE a terrorist organization along with Al-Qaeda and ISIS in 2014. Both the Minnesota and Michigan congresswomen deny they are anti-Semitic. However, they promote the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, that's BDS, which seeks to punish Israel by economically depriving the country for its alleged mistreatment of Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. The Anti-Defamation League describes BDS as, quote, the most prominent effort to undermine Israel's existence. Tawidi has condemned the duo's anti-Semitism in the past, specifically while visiting the Auschwitz concentration camp in Poland. Quote, the American Congress should not be a platform for Islamist members of the American government to preach their hate against the Jewish people. Tawidi said that in February. The Jewish people will remain a minority and have remained a minority. If this situation continues, then this minority will be persecuted once again, and we need to make certain this never happens. It's very sad to see what is happening within the American government, he said. People like Rashidi Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, absolute frauds and Islamists, promoting hatred against the Jewish people. So, drums of war, they're beating again in the Middle East. But let me ask you this, is anything scarier than that? The answer to that question is a resounding yes. We have recent history with war in the Middle East. America learned a lot from both wars in Iraq, and certainly much was learned from the drastic changes in contemporary war in the U.S. struggle with Syria and with ISIS. War is different than ever before. It has changed. Yet its devastation and severe cost of human life, social and actual infrastructure, and dollars and cents keep most from testing it as being a logical answer for conflict. But still, the strong men of the world speak freely of war as not just rare possibilities, but as near certain probabilities. It's the same concept as the bully in the schoolyard staking out his territory and testing his power. But even with U.S. ships in the Mediterranean and drawing the line in front of Iran, the scariest potential war that faces the U.S. is not against a foreign foe or even several. It's a war from within. Yes, the drums of war that sound the loudest are those marking a second U.S. civil war. Now, it's easy to imagine that a second civil war might proceed like the first. Two particular factions with state militaries against each other along specific strategic fronts. Generals would choose a side. Those with the most troops and firepower at their disposal would claim victory. The outcome, we imagine, would likely be a winner-take-all restructuring of the U.S. But that's not really how wars are fought in the 21st century. Indeed, much of the last century was about deconstructing the habits of large-scale, state-driven conventional warfare, like, you know, World War I, World War II, the Korean conflict, the Vietnam War. as networks distribute power now to the edges. There are networks, and they do distribute power to the extreme left and the extreme right. War fighting shifts further away from a handful of central forces and towards a web of small actors. Warfare now comes from ideologically and economically diverse communities whose suffering and fear is preyed upon by stealthy bad guys, strong men. They become guerrillas, rebel factions, proxies, and insurgencies. Sometimes they look more like tribal conflicts composed along racial, religious, or economic lines, often on top of crises that push violence to become a necessary solution. But they're rarely simple two-sided conflicts, like in the old days. To dismiss this possibility here in the U.S. risks missing the signs of coordinated disruption and violence. If we keep thinking in terms of opposed armies, we'll fail to develop successful strategies for recognizing and containing such a new hybrid-type warfare. For the U.S., the shape of future internal conflicts will be as decentralized. A 21st century homeland conflict would likely be made up of a bunch of diverse factions that are organized by digital tools around ideological networks. It would likely be a patchwork of affiliated insurgency groups engaging in light skirmishes along the edges of their networks, mixed with high-value terror attacks against soft and hard targets. Such groups are much smaller than conventional militaries, and where they lack in firepower, they replace with ugliness and severity. As in Charlottesville and Berkeley, the fronts are less regional and far more ideological. Furthermore, digital networks erase the boundaries of the state. Like the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, any cell can access the literature, claim allegiance to some distant suburb, and start whipping up violence against their targets. Both Antifa and the alt-right are a mix of different groups loosely coupled under their respective brand names with local chapters spread across global networks in the U.S. and outside the U.S. These are not top-down hierarchies like the U.S. government against the Japanese government. They're stealthy and shapeless with the capacity to grow quickly, then just as quickly disappear. As an example, consider ISIS. One cannot explain the speed and scale at which the Islamic State formed without that network effect. And it can happen again, and it can happen in the United States. Just as we risk missing the signs of network violence, thinking in terms of a classic civil war can blind us to the many actors working to disrupt the U.S. from within and beyond our borders. Behind the extremists are often additional layers of those who hate the liberty and freedom of the United States. Oligarchs, transnational criminal networks, and foreign powers wielding them on both sides toward their strategic goals. We've seen this with Russian-backed Facebook groups organizing right-wing protests in the U.S., and in the increasing regularity of information warfare originating from adversarial governments. They don't want or feel the need to invade the U.S. from the outside, but to use these types of networking to attack the U.S. from within, using angry and disenfranchised Americans. Not soldiers from other countries, soldiers from within the United States. With this in mind, we can picture what a modern U.S. civil war might look like. More sporadic and unexpected conflicts, but with fewer deaths. Factions popping up like mushrooms, taking different forms, but coordinated across invisible networks. Waves of information warfare. Chaos and accelerated violence with a healthy immune response from the local and national authorities. Kind of like, you know, hey, we'll keep our hands off and just let them fight each other. We'll see what happens at the end of it all. The outcome and probable goal would likely be a split of the Republic into smaller, more manageable alliances, though it may just as easily harden an increasingly unilateral federal government. This is essentially how Russia waged its internal war against Ukraine. To counter this threat in America, it's critical to establish more formal practices for identifying and tracking domestic extremism, with an honest recognition that young, white males on both ends of the political spectrum are the most likely to commit violence. It's not just on the left, the extremist, and it's certainly not just on the right. It's on both ends of the spectrum. In doing so, there must be inclusion in looking for likely participants from every faction. Likewise, we must formalize intense network analysis to map and track these groups across their territories, their digital territories, and to identify who's behind them, their funders, and their agitators. Somebody's pushing the right buttons. Finally, there needs to be a very serious conversation about how to regulate Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter as platforms for influence, instigation, propaganda, and recruiting. No matter what they say, folks, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, and certain other social networks are involved in this, maybe benignly, but these groups are using Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter as platforms to influence others. For now, America's held in line by the strong rule of law, thank God, and a good economy, so good that most people still have something to lose if they choose violence. But as our government and corporate leaders continue to attack the rule of law and economic opportunity, which they do, and it's an oxymoron to most Americans, when you put more money in people's pockets, you create more jobs, reduce unemployment to never before seen levels. One would think everybody would be happy. The norms deteriorate, and the space for evil spurred by anger becomes bigger when this chaos is instilled in the American populace. Who can forget what happened in Oregon or at Berkeley? Antifa out there calling themselves against fascism when actually what they're doing is exactly what fascists do around the world. Are we headed to the second U.S. Civil War? Listen up to these next few sentences. My gut says the likelihood of a second U.S. Civil War in the next 5 years is between 20 and 40%, but it's trending upward, and it's trending upward significantly. And with the vitriol and hatred being spewed daily by the 24 in number and growing Democrat presidential candidates, the possibilities for anger rising to the level of internal war are steadily increasing. And that conversation that's so desperately doing what it's doing to the fabric of America is fueled every day by a liberal media that is in cahoots with the Democrat Party and other leftists to stoke the fires of war and beat the drums of war ever louder every day. God help us. Folks, this 65-year-old grandfather of six doesn't want to sit idly on the sidelines and be forced to pray every day for the safety of my six grandsons while they wage war, especially against fellow Americans. War is the direct product of men and women who simply refuse to discuss resolutions to their differences because of hardness in their hearts. Bearing a few teenage children is too great a price to pay for the pride that instigates those deaths. But stopping a civil war is a process that requires mutual agreement. I am fearful there aren't enough people in D.C. that really care to do the right thing in regard to many issues we're dealing with today, yet alone stop a war. We can't even agree on tax reductions. We can't even agree on what laws we're going to enforce and which ones we're not. Congress passes federal laws, and then Congress doesn't enforce the laws that they passed, sent to the president, signed into law, on the books. Congress just looks the other way. Wisdom dictates reasoning. Reasoning dictates compromise. That's where they're missing it in Washington. Yeah, there are differences of policies. There are differences of things that certain people like and others disdain. But wisdom dictates reasoning. You got to get to the table. You got to be able to lay out very objectively the parts of your side that are against the parts of the other side. The other side needs to lay theirs out, and reasoning then dictates compromise. Compromise sometimes is necessary. You got to find the best path that you can achieve going forward in every area. Hopefully, that will be the song that in Washington we'll sing in this circumstance, and do away with any conversation about the drums of war, especially on U.S. soil. not a happy topic to think about or talk about today, but it's one that every American needs to really think hard about and watch closely. We need to find ways to encourage our legislators to get things done. Give a little, take a little, compromise as and when necessary, but peace has got to be the goal and the objective that everything they do in Washington is built around. Taking care of America, protecting Americans first, and we cannot let our nation devolve into another civil war. We've got to find common ground. And you know what? We can do that. Thank you for joining us here today at Truth News Network. Always good to get together. Always great to talk to you about significant things that are very important for Americans to address. If you push it under the rug, folks, it's still there. It's just under the rug, but it's still there. We've got to ferret out the issues, find resolution, and get on the same path moving towards justice, liberty, and peace in the United States. Until we get together again, thanks for joining us. Have a great day. So long, everybody.
Read all about it. Hear the truth. TNN,
the Truth News Network.